Konnichiwa.
Kurisu des, yoroshiku onegai shimasu. Nihon ni ikemashita, shigoto de. Oftewel, in English, my name is Chris, pleased to meet you. I've been to Japan for my work. And I like to show off pretending I talk Japanese, but actually, much more than that I can't do. But I do love Japanese language, it's like puzzling. So if there's cryptographers here, study Japanese, it's awesome. So my talk will be about coordinated vulnerability disclosure in Japan. I've been there for our institute, the Dutch Institute for Vulnerability Disclosure. Some of you might know us already. We're a group of volunteers. We scan the whole internet for vulnerabilities. Here are some latest stats, 198 members, 1.3 million IP addresses received a notification from us that they have a severe vulnerability, most notably a CVE, high. We also do 0 days, well, in the cases we have, and ethics is at the basis of what we do. So everything we do is to make the internet safer, not less safe. We also share our data globally. So if we run a case, say it's Citrix, FortiGate, Microsoft Exchange, something like that, the individual organizations receive a notification. And in the next day, we also forward the data to local GovCerts in an increasing number of countries. So if you look at the map, most European countries are connected to us, so their GovCerts receive a list of IP addresses with email addresses. They can send their notification to that they're vulnerable. We also operate in the UK, in Brazil, Singapore, Taiwan, Australia, and also in Mexico, formerly known as us, Trumpistan, you can also say. But how about Japan? You know, it's a big country, 127 million people. It's an economic willpower, but for the FED, it was like a blank spot. If we sent notifications over there, we didn't get much response from there. Being a managing director, I'm very happy that I got a very good management team now, so that allows me to also do some projects myself. So I've been to Japan several times, and I thought, well, let's go on adventure to Japan again. Because the first time I went there was 2006. It was just, you know, YOLO, see what happens there. And back then I worked at the Rotterdam Institute, done research on ICT and society. And a colleague of mine visited the embassy and he said, well, Chris, you might as well go to the embassy because they love technology and maybe you can get a project. I thought, yeah, YOLO, just go. So they asked me, well, what are you currently working on? I said, well, RFID, radio frequency identification. Said, oh, awesome. Yeah, we don't know anything about it, but the Japanese love it. So I got a project. I could send some students. They would do the research. They would prepare a whole tour on laboratories, universities, companies. And we go back, write a report, publish it. Great. So I've done that several times. When we working here on what we call IoT or ambient intelligence, there they call it ubiquitous network society. So everything is smart and sensored and connected. When we talk here about privacy, there they talk about Anshin. And Anshin means sort of inner peace through external control. Things are being taken care of. They love that. Also done research on healthcare robotics. Because it's an aging population. They love technology, so we thought, well, if you want to see the future, you go to Japan. Long story short, healthcare robotics don't work. So then I thought, okay, now I work at the IVD, and we have valuable data to share. So let's just see if I can go there. Well, just accidentally, I was at a governmental conference, and I just gave a talk on the IVD. And I was approached by Ernst Norman, and he shook my hand and he said, I'm the Dutch cyber ambassador. So first of all, it was a joke. I said, cyber ambassador, you know, what the hell does a cyber ambassador do? You talk cyber to everybody. He said, no, I am connected to all the diplomats around the world from the Netherlands who do something with cyber. I said, oh, well, okay, right, did I go to Japan? I've been there before, you know, with DIVD. I said, I will arrange that. I thought, well, I will never hear anything about this guy. But Actually, he contacted the Dutch embassy, and they said, well, we have this budget for public diplomacy. So if you can arrange, you go there to a conference and you have a valuable presentation, you get 5,000 euros for the trip, for the hotel, you get support from the embassy. YOLO! Being due to Japan, what is the first thing you need to do? Maishi, or business card. It's very important. If you meet, you hand your business card with two hands, and you say, Yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Watashi no meishi desu. Dozo. Nice to meet you. Here's my business card. So, to the embassy in Tokyo. Awesome. So my mission was fivefold. First, I wanted to do research, like I did before, on, in this case, coordinated vulnerability disclosure. How does that work in Japan? Is it legal or not to scan and notify people on vulnerabilities without their informed consent? Well, in the Netherlands, it's kind of allowed. In most countries, it isn't. So I was really looking forward, are we allowed to do this in Japan, or am I going to jail, or am I stuck at the Dutch embassy? Do they have governmental policies for coordinated vulnerability disclosure? Are there any interesting projects we can learn from? And most of all, are there opportunities to collaborate so we can forward our data to them? So let's dig into the first question of this mission. When we scan Japan from the outside, are there many vulnerabilities or not? So one of our collaborating partners is Shadow Server. They also scan the whole world for vulnerabilities, but more massively, and you have this awesome statistics. So if you look at the top 100 CVEs, you see on the top, of course, it's Mexico again, Germany, China, and Japan is actually comparatively very low. That's the quantitative side, what Shadow Server does. But if you look into the Dutch Institute of Vulnerability Disclosure figures, which is more qualitative, so we have a single vulnerability, which is one case. And, well, in some cases, there are relatively few or relatively a lot of Japanese IP addresses vulnerable. These are all organizations we can prevent from being hacked. So, okay, then I have a mission. I have something to bring them. So the first thing I needed to do, get a stage on a conference. And if you ever go to Japan, let me give you a short warning. Conferences there are boring. They are absolutely boring. Looks like I'm very thrilled. I'm just very happy that I'm there. But if I make a picture of the room, it's a very large room, very few people, and everybody just sitting there. And they give these very boring presentations, no questions. And afterwards, then it happens, you give your maishi, and you get deals done. That's how they do that. But luckily, they also have hacker conferences, and they're the total opposite. This was in a nightclub, and well, my stage looks kind of different. Everybody is walking by, and if you can read the sign, yes, it says drunkers. So it started at 2 o'clock, and already everything was covered with cocktails. And everybody was already drunk in the afternoon. So that's the kind of two opposites of conferences you can have in Japan. At the first conference, I asked about coordinated vulnerability disclosure, and everybody said, no, we don't do that, we don't do that. And actually, the conference was mostly hijacked by Americans who said, yeah, you need to join us in the cyber war, hack back the Russians. And the Japanese would say, no, that's not allowed, no, we don't do that. While here, it was more YOLO and a lot of fun, and well, most of the presentations I forgot. Well, what I did remember was how the hackers operate there. So I asked them, too, you know, do you scan websites or do you find 0 days? What do you do? And there also the answer was, no, we don't do that. I only report bugs if there's a bug bounty program. So, are there bug bounty programs? No. Okay, so work to do. Apparently, there are some legal ramifications to ethical hacking in Japan. So I asked a couple of lawyers, could you translate, you know, and what laws do apply? Well, to summarize them shortly, you have three laws, the Penal Code, Strafrecht in Dutch, Act on Prohibition of Unauthorized Access, and the Radio Act. Well, it's mostly about business continuity. If you start hacking, you inflict damage. So it's not in the privacy realm as we do, but it's more on business continuity. And yeah, you can go to jail by, you know, gaining unauthorized access or eavesdropping on communication. That's actually our core business. Luckily, you can get away with it with 500,000 yen, which is about 3,000 euros. Okay, we're covered for that. That's the law, like it is in most countries. But then if you dig deeper, you see, okay, we do have cases on vulnerability disclosure that are perceived as valuable. And is there a policy for people who like to proceed? Well, cybersecurity policy in Japan looks a bit like this. It's very well embedded in all layers of the government. So from the cabinet to several ministries, they have all these organizations, working groups. In the Netherlands, we have the NCSC, which is now becoming a sort of conglomerate of several cybersecurity agencies getting together. Some other countries, you have one strong NCSC. And Japan, you have a couple of NCSCs all over the place, which is pretty cool. And it turned out that if you Google for coordinated vulnerability disclosure, you find this document, which is a policy, and it dates back 20 years. So the Japanese were already working on coordinated vulnerability disclosure from 2004 on. And I thought, bingo, yes, we got something to learn from. They're pretty well advanced. So if you translate this document, norms and standards for the effective implementation of vulnerability assessment by those involved in government information systems. And I'm going to run you through the whole document, and luckily they summarized it in this nice schedule. So, if you find a vulnerability in either software, so it might be a zero-day, or on a website, you go to the Information Promotion Agency, which is part of the government, and they see it, well, so if it's a vulnerability report on software, it goes to JPCert, and if it's on a website, then they forward it to the host of the website, or the owner of the website. And there's actually a procedure for that. Oh, sorry. Okay. So on the website of the IPA, you can just send an email, and with your notification, either on 0 days or a software vulnerability in a website. I thought, well, that's very awesome. But there's a catch to it. You can only do this if you follow the guidelines. And these guidelines are actually pretty strict. There's a lot of stuff you can't do. You are allowed by logging in with using the valid procedures. Of course you can. You are allowed to enter a bit of text here and there or add something to the URL. Well, in hacker language, you can notify a cross-site scripting or an IDOR, you know, insecure direct object reference, which to us is boring. Remote code execution, on the other hand, it's illegal. Crap. So when I walk through the schedule and ask all these agencies, now who can I talk to about vulnerability disclosure, who might be helping us forwarding? And everybody pointed at JPCert. And JPCert, so the Japanese Computer Emergency Response Team, here they are, is actually an independent foundation. They do get some governmental money, but they are also the head CNA, so the CV numbering authority in Japan, and they already collaborate with GovCerts around the world. So I thought, okay, these are the guys I need to go to. So I sat there, they gave a presentation, and well, it looked like any ordinary GovCert, you know, they collaborate with companies, if there are new vulnerabilities, they send notifications, blah, blah, blah. And when I started to tell about the work we do, I saw them increasingly looking, is he really saying this? So you scan the whole internet for vulnerabilities, and then you send them email? Yes. Why? It works. Ah. But it's not legal, right? Well, in the Netherlands it is. Ah. Okay. And then I said, well, why don't you do that? No, it's illegal, it's illegal. No. So I thought, okay, well, mission failed. Long silence. And one of the guys, Koishiro here, he suddenly said, well, we did it once, yes. There was this case in 2023, and it was a Citrix vulnerability. At first, we got some figures on, you know, IP addresses which were vulnerable, but then we got a list of IP addresses which were already hacked. Well, then we started notifying all these people because that's very severe. I said, oh, yeah, Citrix, you mean the CVE 2023-2A19? Yes, that one. I said, how did you get this data? From Shadow Server. Ah, Shadow Server is one of our partners. That was our data you received. Oh, that's from DIVD. Yes. So, and then the atmosphere cleared, and I said, well, awesome, let's collaborate. So, I mean, my mission was a success. And if you're a true hacker, I got their challenge coin. Anybody want to see? Oh. Be careful with it. So, at least you can hear now it's not plastic. And of course, I handed them my challenge coin from DIVD. So these lovely people we now collaborate with. And each time we run a case, like once a week, they get tens, hundreds, sometimes thousands of IP addresses with email with it so they can notify. No, in some cases, the question was, do you notify only the vulnerabilities or only cases where the IP address is already hacked? Depends on the case. Mostly it's just the vulnerabilities. So what will they do? Yes, they will notify that you're vulnerable based on our data. Yes, okay. So, okay, the mission was already accomplished. The 5,000 euro from the Dutch government was well spent. So let's take it a bit further. If they work on, yeah, so next time somebody has a question, I throw the microphone at you. Yes. Yeah, so. Oh, it's not the catch box, no, sorry. So if they are so involved in security and actually they have very few vulnerabilities, are there any other projects we can learn from? And this project I really love, and I'm really curious what you think of it. It's called the NOTICE project. National Operation Towards IoT Clean Environment, and it's executed by NICT. It's the National Institute for Information and Communication Technology. And it's like a independent sub-department of the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Japanese love IoT. They have all sorts of smart devices everywhere, and you don't want them to be hacked. So also like 20 years ago, NIC already started scanning for vulnerabilities and what will happen and stuff. And they developed what they call a survey. And what it literally does, it touches all 127 million IP addresses in Japan, looking for a router, a webcam, the converter of your solar panel, any IoT. And they try to log in with passwords up until 8 figures or easy to guess passwords. And if they can access it, they send you a notification through your ISP. So they actually hack their citizens to make them safe. Next, they also started scanning for vulnerabilities in IoT. And moreover, they also scan for the presence of malware. Mirai Botnet is still present there. And if you're infected with malware and you're part of a botnet, you get a notification from your ISP. Please update your IoT or switch it off, patch it. And if you don't, you get disconnected. I think that's bloody awesome. So if you look at some of the figures, so these are the Japanese IP addresses, so they are all in range. And if you look at the numbers, so with the weak passwords, it's about 14,000 a month get a notification. If you look at, well, high-risk firmware vulnerabilities, it's almost 5,000 a month get a notification. And if you look at the malware infections, it's 1,200 a day. This really works very well. So Just to ask you the question, would you be in favor that here in the Netherlands or in Europe, we will do a similar approach? Who will say yes? Oh, okay. Now, who will say no? Ah, right, yes. Yeah, if you don't want to patch at this moment, and the other remark was, what about false positives? That might be a reason for not doing it. But overall, it makes things safer. And I think this is a very good approach we can learn from. And yes, you need to change some privacy rules. So, yeah, that comes to the final question, which opportunities for future collaboration are there in for DIVD in Japan? So when I came home, we of course, we needed to arrange an agreement to have some signatures and stuff, and well, it took us some time, of course. Japan, they needed a lot of negotiation, and then the boss comes, and then the lawyer comes, but in the end, we're now sharing our data with Japan. So that's now country number 20. And yeah, they get our vulnerabilities. And of course, I'm looking forward for more possibilities to go to conferences, workshops, and stuff, to have an excuse in going there. And the GP cert is also the cert of the secretary of AP cert, so this Asian Pacific cert, where Singapore, which is already on board, Malaysia, China, Indonesia, Thailand, collaborate on cybersecurity. So actually, they're in the Far East, they're doing pretty well on cybersecurity and coordinated vulnerability disclosure. So yeah, I was very happy to go there and looking for future collaboration. Anyway, if you have any questions, I'm going to Japan. Please ask them to me. Domo arigato gozaimashita. So a question in the back there. There you go. Can you switch it on? Does. European technology sucks. Better have a Japanese microphone.
Hallo?
Ja.
Ik had twee vragen. Krijg je ook nu data uit Japan van al die apparaten die ze scannen?
Yeah, so first question is, do we also receive data from devices they scan in Japan? No, because they're not allowed to exchange this kind of data. And actually, with none of the GovCerts, we get data in return. We do get data in return on if our notifications triggered any response. So if people email back saying, well, I don't understand this, or it's a false positive, then we do get them in return. But they won't share data on vulnerable IP addresses in Japan. Because, yeah, why should they? If they're vulnerable, we already see it, we already have this data, we already notified them. But we do collaborate with GovCerts on prioritizing our vulnerabilities. So, yeah, most of the high vulnerabilities we do scan on, but you know, mostly within a day or two. But we also have DEF lists, so determined exploited vulnerabilities. We get from governments so we can prioritize some cases above others. You had another question, right?
Yeah, why was Singapore upside down?
Singapore upside down?
Yeah, on your map.
That's fine.
Yeah. No reason, I guess.
On the map? Oh yes, I made this map this morning and a terrible hangover. And on my laptop it's very small. Oh, here, yeah.
I thought maybe there was something wrong.
Yeah, it's the other side of the world, so I don't know. But very keen, yeah. If you notice small mistakes like this, you probably have a hacker mindset. Any other questions or remarks? Theories, jokes, anything? Last? 3, 2, 1. Okay. So finally, if you ever want to go to Japan and you want some personal advice, you know where to find me. DFD has a lot of presentations here at Hacker Hotel. Next up, Frank Bredek will be doing a balloon folding. And tomorrow we'll be giving a presentation on a new research line specifically focused on energy. So basically hacking the grid in order to make it safe.
We also have our communications and head of communication and head of people and culture giving a presentation on a communication guide for hackers to the galaxy. So how we hackers can communicate with the rest of the world. Next up, we also have Jelle, who made his stairs very smart. So yeah, you can recognize us from the t-shirts. Thank you very much.